is Mary Johnson. Her sermon title is Planting the Seed, the Story of Reverend William D.R.C. Haley and the Unitarian Society of Alton, 1853 to 1856. This church is a home where no revealed truths are promoted, and no scripture or human being is accepted as infallible. This is a place for searching for truth, but we are believers. We believe in intellectual freedom. We believe in justice. We believe in compassion and concern for each other and the whole world. We believe in commitment to those ideals which make us caring and active in the struggles for human dignity. We are Unitarian Universalists. If this is your first time here, we invite you to fill out the visitor cards found in the back of the gray hymnal and place the card in the offering plate. We'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities going on here at the church. You can also learn more about the church from pamphlets and other printed information available in the fellowship hall, which is right through that door, or by talking with anyone here in the congregation. At the front of our sanctuary, we have a spirit chair, right there, which holds activities for all ages, including coloring pages, crayons, pipe cleaners, and more. And the pipe cleaners are fun to play with. Anyone is invited to go to the spirit chair at any time during the service to take an activity back to your seat. We welcome you into this home of comfort, spirit, and justice, and hope to see you on future Sundays. Now I invite you to please greet your neighbors, particularly the ones you don't know. Pardon? Oh, I'll do it. So concerned. I'll get him. I'm sorry. We'll survive. It seems that when it comes to announcements, we either have a whole bunch of them or we have none. Well, this Sunday is a whole bunch of them, so. Everyone is invited to stay for our monthly potluck immediately following the service. It doesn't matter if you didn't bring anything, there's always plenty of food. Also, if you want to go to the 11:15 religious education for adults, please feel free to bring your plate right into the Emerson Place. Thank you. Dear St. Louis Area Unitarian Universalists, you are invited to stand on the side of love and witness to our Unitarian Universalist values on Saturday, August 8th in Chesterfield. As you may know, Emerson UU Chapel is now in the 10th month of a weekly vigil in Chesterfield, proclaiming that Black Lives Matter. August 8th, however, will be different from all previous weeks. The weekend of August 7th to 9th marks an important anniversary in our region. Unitarian Universalists from around the country will be coming to St. Louis to support local racial justice activists in commemorating the anniversary of the Ferguson Uprising. Because of this influx of UU from all corners of the United States, we will have a record number of people participating in our vigil, and we would love to have you join us as well. We are sending a press release to several media outlets, and we are planning a press conference during the vigil to let people know what we have been doing and why, including in our many months of vigil and recent meetings with the Chesterfield Police Department to discuss racial justice in policing. Please join us August 8th to stand in solidarity with Black Lives Matter movement and with your fellow UUs. Date, Saturday, August 8th, 2015, 11:30 to a.m. to 12:30 p.m., corner of Boone's Crossing and Chesterfield Airport Road and Chesterfield Valley in front of the Sonic. Debbie Lovell. Is Debbie here? No, she's not. Okay. Casey, kind of wave your hand. Where's Casey? The nursery is now being staffed by volunteers. Any age child is welcome to join us today. If you are interested in volunteering to watch our little ones, no long-term commitment required. Just talk to Casey about signing up for a shift, or seven if you wish, for the next year. Thanks, Casey. Nancy Maglison's daughter, Melanie Bolter, age 32, died unexpectedly on July 29th. There will be a celebration of her life Saturday, August 8th, from 1 to 3 at the Old Bakery Beer Company at 400 Landmark Boulevard in Alton. The obituary is in today's Alton Telegraph. Two more announcements, I'm almost finished. An usher plea. This is from Mary Weber. Mary, can you kind of raise your hand? Everybody look back at Mary, because this is important. You need to know who she is. Now, the reason you need to know who she is because Mary is trying to reboot our usher program. Being an usher is one of the easiest jobs here in this church, and you can even do it on church time. It's a good job because it takes virtually very little preparation. But it is of primary importance in making everyone welcome, especially our visitors feel welcome and at home. So please consider helping us out. There is a sign-up sheet in the worker room through that door. And if you have questions, please contact Mary Weber. Another request, also from Mary, who normally fills in as an usher, she will not be here next Sunday. And on that Sunday, because of the Ferguson event, we'll have several UU visitors. So it's especially important that we have ushers to welcome our UUs. Please consider volunteering and helping Mary out. So anybody wants to volunteer, see her after the service. We now begin our service this morning with a musical prelude. The call to worship words this morning are by Unitarian minister Jack Mendelson. Here in the sanctuary of ancient dreams, wisdom, and beauty, we come to grow, to be healed, to stretch mind and heart, to be challenged, renewed, to be helped in our own continuing struggles for meaning and for love, to help build a world with more justice and mercy in it, to be counted among the hopers and the doers. In the face of cynicism, darkness, brutality around and within us, we seek to align ourselves with a living community that would affirm rather than despair, that would think and act rather than simply adjust and succumb. Here we invite the spirit of our own humanity and the healing powers under, around, through, and beyond us to give us the nerve and grace, the toughness and sensitivity to search out the truth that frees and the life that makes all things new. As joy lights our chalice, please join in the unison chalice reading. We light the chalice in memory of the courage for those who have struggled for freedom, the assistance of those struggled for justice, and the love of those who built beloved communities to carry the light of hope.
Who knows who John Chapman was? I guess it's given away up there already. So I won't ask you who Johnny Appleseed was, but they are one and the same person. And the reason you know about Johnny Appleseed is because in 1871, Reverend William Haley, who had been the minister at this church in the mid-1850s, wrote an article about Johnny Appleseed, and the article received nationwide attention when it was published in a well-known magazine called Harper's. And the pictures you're seeing are from the original article. The information Haley gave about Appleseed became the foundation for all the publications and films produced about him in the next 100 years. Haley not only did research about Appleseed, but from my reading of the article, it appears that Haley walked some of the trails that Appleseed walked, found some of the orchards he planted, and talked with some of the grandmas and grandpas who knew Appleseed when they were children. Haley wrote that John Chapman came by the name Johnny Appleseed because back in the early 1800s, he traveled through the valleys of Ohio and Pennsylvania and Indiana, planting apple seeds on the very edge of the wilderness. Johnny would follow the Indian trails through the forest, and when he found a good spot to start an apple tree nursery, he'd clear the land and sow the seed and build a fence of old logs to mark the area. And every once in a while, he'd have to retrace his steps and go back to settled territory to refill his leather bag with seeds from apple cider mills. And then he would move on and start planting more apple seeds. And when the pioneers finally arrived to farm the wilderness land, there would already be apple trees there for their use. Now, Haley's Johnny Appleseed was a very interesting character. He went barefoot, even in winter, wore old clothing that others had thrown away, or often just a coffee bean sack with holes for his arms and head, and his hat was a tin pan or something made of heavy paper that had a brim to keep the sun out of his eyes. He was a vegetarian, hated cruelty to animals, and practiced a Swedenborgian religion. And he got along with both the settlers and the Indians, but he would warn the settlers if he learned of an impending attack by warring tribes. Appleseed would visit in settlers' homes, telling them the best way to care for the apple trees, share his books and pamphlets about Swedenborgianism. He'd actually tear the books up in pieces and leave one piece with one family and another piece with another family. And when he came back around, he'd switch them around. So people got an interesting combination of information about Swedenborgianism. And he'd tell the people, the mothers and the fathers and the children, that apple trees were a gift from God. And he'd often be invited to spend the night, and he'd sleep on the floor of a settler's cabin. He died at the age of 72, and almost 50 of those years had been in planting apple trees, making the wilderness fruitful. So next time you have an apple, think of Johnny Appleseed and the Unitarian minister who wrote about him. Please rise in body and spirit now to sing a song almost related to apples and things like that called the Garden Song. It was popularized by Unitarian Universalist singer and environmental activist Pete Seeger. Take time in our service to reflect on the joys, celebrations, sorrows, and concerns in our lives. Each of these may be represented by stones from the earth mingled with rain from the sky. Each week we engage our hearts, minds, bodies, and spirits as we reflect on what is going on in our lives. I invite you now to come forward and place stones in the bowl of water, watching the ripples each stone makes in this microcosm of our blue boat home.
Thank you.
Please take a deep breath, inhaling slowly in, and inhaling slowly out. As you settle into your seat and into your breath, think about your mother. Doesn't matter whether you liked your mother or disliked your mother. Simply think about the person who brought you into this world to be part of the interdependent web of existence. Think about your father, who played a big part in that. Doesn't matter whether you liked your father or disliked your father. Just know that your mother and your father are responsible for your being part of our interdependent web. As you take another breath in, think about a mentor you had, someone who in your childhood was particularly kind to you, or who provided you with some insight into yourself. Think about that person and how they mentored you when maybe you need it the most. As you breathe in, remember that person, as you also remember your parents. As you breathe in and breathe out, think about your first contact with somebody that represented a religion or a spirituality. Think about how they may have mentored you or maybe not mentored you. It doesn't really matter. What matters is that the contact was there in your past. Think about someone positive on your spiritual journey who mentored you. As you think about all these people in your past, be aware that they are only part of a huge interdependent web that goes back further and further. Your parents had parents. Your mentors had parents. Your spiritual leaders had parents. It goes further back and back, tracing things back 100 years ago, even longer. And as you sit in these pews, breathing in and breathing out, remember that you would not be in this church were it not for those people that were Unitarian Universalists that started this whole movement that provides this home for us today. And as you breathe in, breathe a sigh of thanks for all those people. And as you breathe out, remember them with gratitude. Let's take another moment to just breathe in and breathe out with thanks, with gratitude. As you keep that gratitude in your heart and mind, be aware that you are in this room right now. You have your fellow Unitarians next to you, and open your eyes and be aware of being here as we continue our service.
The purpose of the church is to encourage all who gather there to grow more generous in spirit and in action. This is the great end of the world's faith traditions, to bring the human being closer to the divine by acts of creation and compassion. We now take an offering that allows us to exercise that all-important generosity of spirit, an offering that will support this self-supporting church and its many ministries. The gifts of the congregation will be most gratefully received. May they be joyfully given. The reading this morning is from a sermon given in 1854 by Reverend William D.R.C. Haley and published in his book, Words for the Workers, in a series of lectures to working men, mechanics, and apprentices. As you will hear later, Reverend Haley gave Sunday afternoon services, which he called lectures, to those who labored in the machine shops, mills, foundries, and fields, and he not only spoke to them of religion, but of ways to better their lives. He spoke these words in his sixth lecture. I wish to impress upon you that we have been considering facts which are of real consequence, and that while our attention has not been given exclusively to matters of direct theological bearing, we have been dealing with subjects of religious significance and consequence. I believe that you can have religion to aid your spiritual growth and to assist you under your difficulties. When you make true and earnest efforts for your fullest expansion of intellect, when religion has work to do, like yourselves, it assumes a working garb, but is nonetheless religion in its work than in the temple. I appeal to you, therefore, to make the bearings of religion upon your practical life a matter of thought and reflection. Ask yourselves,
what is the religious significance of your lives? When we limit religion to Sunday, and Sunday to strictly theological speculation, we run the risk of creating the impression that this is the extent of religion. But why, I ask, may we not see religious import in every day's work and in every good purpose and every pure thought?
This morning I'm going to share with you the story of William Darcy Haley and the Unitarian congregation that gathered on this very hill 160 years ago to dedicate a church. I started doing research about Reverend Haley last spring by reading through old church minutes that are housed in the archives at SIUE and looking at a variety of both print and electronic archival sources. And this sermon is a summary of a manuscript on my research that I've submitted for possible publication in the Journal of Unitarian Universalist History. And I haven't heard yet whether or not it's been accepted, but I have a sermon out of it. William Haley was born in England, but grew up in Boston, where as a young man he worked as a printer. And in 1851, at the age of 24, he entered Meadville Theological School, then located in Pennsylvania. Meadville prepared young men to serve Unitarian churches in the West. And in that day, the West meant states like New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Indiana, and Illinois. These prospective ministers were told that they must, and I quote, be ready to preach in a church or a shed or on a canal boat, without a hymn book, an organ, or pulpit, not to crowds only, but to a single man, and speak to as a clergyman or a layman, wherever they find men starving for the bread of life. In that day, Unitarians were still under the Christian fold, although their theology was based on Jesus as a man, not Jesus as God. And while in seminary, Haley wrote a paper entitled Faith in the Son of God, and he said that nowhere in the Bible did Jesus ask his followers to believe he was God, but always asked them if they believed in the Son of God. And Haley went on to say that first we must believe that Jesus lived and mingled with ordinary people, had a job and a family. Haley wrote that Jesus was the Savior of mankind, not because he died for our sins, but because his life was an example of how we should live our lives, saving us from sins by showing us how not to sin, and through his life showed us the importance of spirituality. Today, under the umbrella of Unitarian Universalism, there are many Christian UUs responding to our living tradition of drawing spirituality from many sources, including the life and teaching of Jesus. Now, upon graduation from Meadville in June of 1853, Haley accepted a call to ministry from the Unitarian congregation in Alton and began his service here in October of that year. That's the best picture I could find. It's the only photo I found of Haley, and it was taken in the early 1860s during the Civil War when he was serving as a chaplain in the Massachusetts Voluntary Infantry. On a passport that he applied for in 1857, he stated he was 5'4" tall, had blue eyes, and gray and brown hair. That's a little better, but that's the only one I've found of him. So, to backtrack a little, we have Reverend Haley arriving in Alton, but what do we know about the Unitarian congregation in Alton? Well, the congregation had a difficult start when it first gathered in the early 1830s. Initially, all went well. By 1836, the congregation had called a minister, and his first sermon given in December of that year is the date we celebrate as the beginning of our church. But by 1838, through a series of untoward societal circumstances, including the death of the founder of the congregation, and the departure of the new minister, afraid for his life after the murder of Reverend Elijah Lovejoy, who was his friend and colleague, after he left, the congregation stopped meeting publicly. Some people possibly gathered in homes, and on occasion, the Reverend William Greenleaf Elliott, pastor of the Unitarian Church of the Messiah in St. Louis, would come up the river by steamboat to give talks to keep Unitarian ideas and teachings alive. But really, for the next 16 years, the congregation existed as sort of a secret society. However, by 1853, the congregation numbered about 30 families, mostly of the merchant, professional, business, and landowner classes, and the men gathered to form the first Congregational Society of Alton and called Reverend Haley as their minister. And it wasn't until 1890 that the society formally took the name Unitarian, but throughout all its years, its members and the Alton community always referred to the Congregational Society as the Unitarian Church. And almost immediately upon his arrival in October, Haley started pressuring the society board to find land to build a church. And for several months, the main discussion at board meetings was about the merits of this piece of property or that piece of property and how they could raise money to buy it. And it was probably very frustrating to Reverend Haley to sit through these rather laborious board meetings. From what I've read in his writing, he seemed to be just go do it kind of guy. So while the board went back and forth about land choices, Reverend Haley was asked to solicit funds from the Unitarian Church in St. Louis. And he went there and he received donations of $3,500. And the Alton congregation itself raised $4,000. So by the spring of 1854, just a few months after the end of a 16-year hiatus, the Unitarians in Alton had a minister and $7,500 toward the building of a church. And that was a great deal of money back then. The board also sent Reverend Haley back east to solicit funds from the American Unitarian Association. And he spent a couple months in Boston and became involved with the Friends of the AUA and assisted in their efforts to distribute Unitarian tracts and books, which reached a larger audience than a single minister in a pulpit ever could, much like our website does today. And while in Boston, Haley became interested in the Immigrant Aid Company, an organization supported by many Northern Unitarians who wanted to settle Kansas with anti-slavery Northerners, because that the territory settlers themselves were going to be able to vote on whether Kansas would be a slave state or a free state. And once Haley returned to Alton in April, he wrote back to one of the organizers of the Immigrant Aid Company saying that he was available to be a Free State newspaper editor and or a minister in Kansas. And in June, he wrote again saying, if I can better serve the cause of Christ and freedom, and I think I can, in Kansas rather than in Illinois, I think I should not hesitate to go there. However, his going to Kansas was dependent on financial support from the Immigrant Aid Company, and that did not materialize. So he stayed in Alton. However, he continued his interest in the activities of the company and its efforts to assure that Kansas would be a free state. Meanwhile, while Haley was in Boston, the Alton Unitarian Board had narrowed the potential properties for the church down to two. One on the corner of 3rd and Alton, where the YWCA is now, and the other one block closer to the river at 2nd and Alton. 2nd is now Broadway. So you kind of get the idea where they were looking. And in April, they purchased the property at 3rd and Alton. But at the next meeting, they decided they really didn't want that lot because it was going to be too expensive to grade it because it was very steep, as still is. So then they decided they'd take the lot at 2nd and Alton, which wasn't as steep, and they hired an architect. In June, however, they rejected the architect's plans and decided they really wanted the property at 3rd and Alton and asked the architect to develop new drawings. This was probably about the same time that Haley considered taking off for Kansas. I don't think organizational minutiae and administrative details were his strong suit. So the church was to be built at 3rd and Alton. However, plans changed again. Back in February of that year, 1854, the Catholic Church that stood on the hill right here at 3rd and Albee was destroyed by fire. The roof, ceiling, pews, choir loft, everything made of wood became ash. The stone walls of the church and its foundations were all that remained. And the Catholics decided not to rebuild, and they put the property up for sale. And it was purchased by a J.B. Stanford, who was a member of the Unitarian congregation. And he turned around immediately and sold it to the society for $4,000. As a kind of humorous side note, it was reported in the October 31st Alton Daily Telegraph that the Catholic Church had sold its property to the Unitarians. In the following issue, however, there was a retraction made, stating that an error had crept into the previous article. The new piece went on to explain that the property was first purchased by Mr. Stanford, who then sold it to the Unitarians. The newspaper wanted to assure the Catholic parishioners that their priests did not sell their property to a Protestant denomination. So construction of the new Unitarian Church started almost immediately and continued through the next summer. And during all this time, the Unitarians were holding two worship services each Sunday in the Alton Library Building. And during his ministry, Haley often preached two different sermons. The 10:20 a.m. sermon was a traditional one, which he once referred to as abstruse philosophical speculation and dry dogmatizing. This service was mostly attended by the wealthier classes. The service at 3 p.m. was for the working classes, the laborers, the mechanics, the apprentices, the farmhands, where Reverend Haley not only offered Unitarian Christianity, but praised physical labor as honorable and necessary. And he encouraged self-education as a way to improve lives. He spoke plainly and related to the working men because he too had been a laborer working as a printer a few years previously. And he knew that some in his congregation did not approve of his giving such talks, but he said that Sunday was the only time laborers were free from working for others, and this was the time to reach their hearts and instill right principles. In 1855, he published his sermons in a book entitled Words for the Workers, in a series of lectures to working men, mechanics, and apprentices. And amazingly, this book, long out of print, was recently digitized and is available on Amazon. And I like to think that the picture on the front is of the Mississippi River. I don't know that it is, but we can say it is. Haley wrote in his introduction to the book that he was speaking directly to the workers because, and I quote, "Here in the West, the world is all busily engaged in preparing to live. The elements are yet chaotic, and upon the faithfulness of the clergy to the actual wants of society must depend the future of the grand civilization which is destined to exist on either bank of the Mississippi." And I wonder if we've really developed that grand civilization that Reverend Haley dreamed about. Haley was also involved in various activities in the wider Unitarian sphere. He was elected for several terms as the recording secretary of the Conference of Western Unitarian Churches, and he also edited a column in the Quarterly Journal of the American Unitarian Association. And I believe activity in these involvements helped assuage his isolation in Alton. I think that over the years, many of our Unitarian ministers here have felt isolated and really not accepted by local clergy peers. Haley was a relative outcast among the other clergy in Alton. Only Reverend Dr. Wood, president of Sherliff Baptist College, became a colleague and a friend. And Haley wrote, "We have been favored with a generous interchange of thought and of the courtesies of life by Dr. Wood, which have been only the more grateful and refreshing from their contrast to the universal cold shoulder with which the gentlemen of the clerical profession have usually seen fit to greet us." As a man with a restless spirit, Haley spent July and August of 1855 living among the Chippewa Indians in Minnesota. He preached Unitarianism and shared Unitarian tracts with the Indians. And after he returned to Alton, he wrote extensive, fascinating travelogue-type letters to the Unitarian publication, The Christian Register, describing his extraordinary experiences and adventures. And his letters were published in four issues of the Register under the heading Wanderings in the Wilderness. And I do have copies of these if anybody's interested in reading them. He also wrote letters to the executive committee of the American Unitarian Association, encouraging them to support missionary work among the Indians in Minnesota. Although he noted that the monetary outlay needed would be enormous, probably $6,000 a year. for missionaries, teachers, and tools, all the things the Indians asked him for. He also said that he almost felt like he should devote his life to missionary work in Minnesota to propagate the Unitarian gospel, but he never went. No funding available for that either. Meanwhile, back in Alton, construction was proceeding at a good pace, and on October 14, 1855, the congregation dedicated its new church building. And this photo of the church was taken sometime between 1878, when the parsonage was built, and 1904, when this church was replaced by the one we're in today. You may notice in the photograph that although the buildings are gone, we still have that tree in the front, and the steps and the stone retaining wall are still with us. The article in the Alton Weekly Courier reported on the dedication service, noting that many Unitarian dignitaries from around the country attended, as well as local community leaders and, of course, the congregation. And the article described in detail the interior of the church and stated that the new church is a credit to our city and a monument of the energy and liberality of its builders. And the total cost was between $12,000 and $15,000. And this communion service set that's down here in front is a gift that, with the inscription of September 1st, 1855, was given to the church by the ladies of New South Church in Boston as, I believe, a gift for the dedication. So we use that for special services. But it has the inscription from 1855. Now, politics took center stage in Haley's life in June of 1856. The Immigrant Aid Company continued to send settlers up the Missouri River to Kansas. But on the other side, pro-slavery Missourians, termed border ruffians, moved into Kansas temporarily to disrupt elections and to intimidate the free staters. Boatloads of settlers would be attacked at various stopping points along the river, boats fired on, and boarded by armed men who would take the settlers' belongings. And settlers were not allowed to go into Kansas unless they signed documents swearing they would obey the current territorial pro-slavery laws. Now, one such boat was forced to return to Alton, and the leader of the boat told his story to a large group of Altonians who gathered at the railroad depot to listen to him. And after he had spoken, the crowd called for Reverend Haley to speak because the townspeople had heard Haley speak before against injustices. And the following Sunday evening, on July 6th, Haley preached a sermon on the aspects of the times, and his sermon was reported in the Courier as a clear statement of the oppressions and wrongs perpetuated upon Christian civilization in Kansas by lawless men. And Haley said in his sermon, "Our republic was founded and cemented by religious principle, and the clergy of 1776, by uniting the moral power of the country for freedom, were a potent auxiliary in the cause. And why should not the clergy of 1856 cry aloud against outrages? The Kansas question is a question of right and wrong. It involves a struggle for civil and religious liberty against heathenish tyranny, and that man is a moral coward who dare not condemn the wrong." Many attended that Sunday evening service and praised Haley, but articles published that the following week in the St. Louis Republican, a pro-slavery newspaper, attacked him and asserted that he did not have the backing of his congregation. And indeed, some congregants did denounce him for speaking about political things from the pulpit. So the following Sunday, on July 13th, following his sermon, Haley offered his resignation to the congregation with these words, "Your condemnations have been exaggerated in a despicable organ of tyranny published in your midst and have furnished material for a wholesale libel on my ministerial character in the St. Louis Republican. The hour has come, therefore, for deciding whether I am to preach for you or to you, whether I am to receive instruction from you or impart it to you, whether outside selfish demagogues control this pulpit or whether I stand here a free man. After weeks of prayer and meditation, the most profound and searching in my lifelong experience, the tremendous responsibilities I am under as a minister of Jesus Christ and as an honest man to speak out all the truth, seeing as I do a black cloud of anarchy and treason arising, observing the alarming success of those whose unholy lust and sensuousness prompt them to choke every honest expression of righteous indignation, and the seeming pliancy of good men who in private admit to me the unholiness and illegality of the recent outrages, and yet the readiness of which such men, even in my own congregation, join in the fallacious cry of preaching politics when I denounce such enormous wrongs from root to branch. Seeing all these things, I am compelled to say that if I cannot be an honest man and be your pastor, I will at least remain honest. If I cannot preach the whole truth, I will not preach at all. While I do not ask for any man's endorsement and do not shrink from any man's condemnation, I do demand the right to utter whatever words my conscience tells me I ought to speak. My conscience cannot be bought for any poor stipend or any man's smile. It only remains for me to resign my office. If I am wrong, may I be forgiven. If I am mistaken, may I be enlightened. But I am very certain I am right, for I can only be honest in acting as I do. There is no word for me but the word of Luther. Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. So help me God. The following Saturday, the congregation met to act on Reverend Haley's resignation. There was lengthy and heated debate, and initially the board voted to accept the resignation. However, then one of the board members offered a substitute motion, which stated, "Mr. Haley has given no just cause during his ministration with us of complaint to anyone, and that however we may, as individuals, differ in opinions upon the numerous questions, political and other, constantly presented to us, yet as a society, we will never condemn a person for upholding the cause of truth, justice, and morality. We as a society would most respectfully request Mr. Haley to withdraw his resignation." And this motion passed with 3 dissenting votes. And the Alton Courier reported on the results of the votes and stated, "This is just as it should be and always will be where a proper regard is entertained for free speech and a free pulpit. If the mouth of a minister of Christ is to be muzzled, we rejoice that it is not to be done in Alton. If public sins abound, we rejoice that we have in our midst those ministers who had the boldness and independence to denounce them. And we particularly rejoice that our Christian societies sustain them in their course. This event in our church history is a crucial one because it is a foundational statement of our long-held belief in and support of freedom of the pulpit. However, always restless, Haley stayed only till October, 3 years to the month he arrived. After he left Alton, he served only one more church, the First Unitarian Church in Washington, D.C., which is now called All Souls. He was there for only 2 years when the Civil War began, and he left to become a chaplain in the Massachusetts Regiment. And over the next few years, he joined 2 other Northern regiments, first as a recruiter and later as a cavalry officer. We don't know how he supported himself immediately after the war. Perhaps he worked as a printer. We know he published articles and edited books, and by the early 1870s started a career as a newspaper editor and publisher. He established 2 newspapers in New York and then moved to California, and over the next decade started 6 more newspapers in various communities. But like Johnny Appleseed, he planted the newspapers, but he didn't stay around very long to see them thrive. Like many early Unitarian ministers whose names have been forgotten, Reverend William Darcy Haley contributed mightily to the cause of Unitarianism in his day, and his ongoing efforts for freedom and justice, both in the pulpit and in the press, made an impact in the communities he served. And we honor him today by recognizing his life and the worth of his words and deeds. Our closing hymn is number 295. Please rise as your spirits and bodies allow, and joy in singing, sing out praises for the journey.
Jesus, Lord,
And now, may we have faith in life to do wise planting, that the generations to come may reap even more abundantly than we have. May we be bold in bringing to fruition the golden dreams of human kinship and justice. This we ask, that the fields of promise become fields of reality. May it be so.